This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, we're going to be talking to two clinicians at this year's USEA ICP Symposium, which took place in Ocala this week. Chris Ryan and Chris Burton will be here a little bit later on. But we begin with a brand new segment in which we'll be featuring news headlines from the USEA. And our first topic concerns the Adequan FEI North American Junior and Young Rider Championships. What is new this year is that all young riders who plan to compete at this summer's event must complete an area declaration to officially state which area they would like to represent. In past years, only riders who were living somewhere other than their on-record addresses had to complete these declarations. Riders can find this declaration form by signing into their My USEF account at usef.org and then clicking on the Amateur Dashboard Online Applications. The USEA Classic Series is calling all riders, both those who have and have not competed in a long format event, to complete a survey to determine how they can best offer Classic Series competitions. And you can find a link to this survey on the homepage of the website at useventing.com. And as of 2017, colleges and universities had to pay a fee to be registered affiliates with the USEA. Not all schools have turned in their registration. Affiliate registration is required in order for students to receive the discounted membership and for them to be eligible to compete at the championship. And you can find out if your school is properly registered for 2017 by going to the website at useventing.com and clicking on the link to Membership Intercollegiate. And now for our main feature this week. Chris Ryan was the featured clinician for the USEA's Future Event Horse Symposium in Ocala, Florida this week. And for those of you who are not familiar with Chris, I can tell you that he comes from one of the most respected equestrian families in Ireland. His father, Chris, hunted the famous Scartine foxhounds, which have been in the family for more than 400 years. And Chris himself has developed a reputation for having an eye for a horse. Many of you will know that he found and produced McKinley, who was ridden, of course, to the silver medal in the 2008 Olympic Games by Gina Miles. Chris has been instrumental in keeping Ireland at the top of the world eventing rankings for 21 of the 23 years that they've been in existence, and he brought that wealth of experience to Ocala this week. So let's hear from Chris. Chris, welcome to the program.
Great to be here, Chris. Great to be here.
Well, let's talk about this presentation. Here you are in Ocala enjoying the Florida sunshine and seeing the enthusiasm for this topic and obviously a very excited crowd who's gathered there at Longwood and at the Jockey Club to hear your presentation. So let's get your, first of all, your impressions so far.
Yeah, the facility here at Longwood and across at Ocala. If you're going to do something, do it right. And straight away, the facility in both places are absolutely amazing.
Well, you've got everything. I think you need all the tools of the trade and the climate to go with it a little bit better than what you're used to at home in February, no doubt.
Yes, and also a heap of Irish bred horses here as well. So I'm very much at home.
That's wonderful. All right. Well, let's talk about the presentation then and how it's gone so far, because you being the man that you are, obviously the nature versus nurture is a big focus when you're looking at a potential event horse. So let's talk about the main points that you were presenting there, Chris.
Yeah. You know, I mean, for me, in a very privileged position as a commentator, I've commentated all our nationals at home, the cross countries, and also abroad. I do the commentating for the internationals, one star, two star, three star, and Strugan, Poland, and also all our home internationals, Tattersall's, Mill Street, Campfire, Kiloki, etc. And what I'm seeing as a commentator, I get to see every horse over every fence. That's in my view. And in one hand, I have the horse's pedigree to hand. Two, with my line of vision, I see horse as model and type. And three, I see his performance at all the grades, from a novice to training to preliminary to one star, two star, three star. And I'm putting together a genetic picture, and I see genetic patterns. These are generalized comments, but when you see 60, 70, 80 horses by the same sire or as the same dam sire, and you see patterns coming up, it's giving me very, very good indicators of what's going on. And I think one of the best common denominator that's coming out of my research is the need for thoroughbred, the need for the forward thinking of the thoroughbred. Without the horse forward thinking, we're starting from a poor place. And I see this no matter what the breed code is, for me, we've got to start looking beyond the breed codes. We're so proud of the ISH. I was sport horse. The rankings in eventing for 20 out of the last 22 years. I mean, that in itself is just an amazing achievement. So you analyze what's going on. And I reckon a lot of what's going on is that cross of thoroughbred with the Irish mare. And genetically, that Irish mare, for me, for the last 2,000 years, she's been galloping over banks and ditches. The first steeplechase run in the world was in Ireland in 1752, I think it was. From Donnery, from Butterfield to Donnery, steeple to steeple. You do that over generations, over centuries. You've got horses that can gallop and jump in a rhythm, out of stride, as they like it. And for me, that is the success of it. But so you look beyond the stud books, you have in the Holstein and the Hanoverian stud book, you've got pure thoroughbred. So just saying a breed code, you've got to look beyond it. And genetically, we can. We have the data.
So the first question, of course, out of that comes to mind, Chris, is how much percentage of thoroughbred would be ideal now for, you know, to get that dominance of thoroughbred for the event horse at any level too? What exact percentage would be ideal, or the minimum, or, you know, the minimum that you could hope for in the kind of breeding you're structuring there?
As a breeder, as a producer, I aim for about 75%. Why? Because for me, it covers all bases. 75% of thoroughbred for me in the cross gives me my four-star eventer. It gives me my amateur horse. It gives me my hunting horse. It gives me my top-quality Leicestershire hunter. It covers all the bases. And we know that in 75%, in Blair Europeans there, the three out of the four horses for Germany were above 75%. This exam, 76%. When the going gets tough, we see in statistics, and I love stats because, again, I have a favorite saying that I got from John Osborne of the Irish National Stud. If you can't measure, you can't improve. And I love statistics, so it is a measurement. Now, you can do what you like with that. I understand this, but they are still a very, very smart indicator. We know that Badminton and Burley, for those two four-stars, you need the highest quotient of thoroughbred blood of all the four-stars around the world. This is statistically proven. We saw it at Wegg there in Normandy, where the ground got real cut up real bad, and the horses that there couldn't get beyond the seven-minute mark. Lacking blood. We saw it in Blair, the championships, Europeans, where again, and the horses that are winning these, Upland Louvo, 82% blood. I'm thinking of this exam, 76%. I'm looking for more blood than I need. It's like a car, it's like a tractor. You need more horsepower than you actually need. So if you're going to produce a horse for four-star, for me, we don't know what the ground is going to be like at the next four-star, but you want to have a lot of extra blood in the bank for me. And to have 76, 77, 78% blood, as a general comment, we know horses in the cross, natural selection, will give some horses a lot more of the thoroughbred blood in the cross. Look at their own brothers, their own sisters, and you see them, they can be pulled apart. So again, this is natural selection, and we've got to accept that in some crosses, the flush of blood coming through for me is less in some individuals than others. This is nature. For me, and it's coinciding with research, exciting research I'm finding both in the continent and also in, funny enough, Argentina, that if you get blood coming through from the dam side, there's a much more likelihood that it's actually going to show that it can be utilized. And I love this. And it's research is coming out of different directions, and I love this. To go back to nature and nurture, nature for me is the pure genetics, pure and simple, the pure genetics. The nurture then is so, so important. Whose hands, get your horses in the right hands at all stages.
So let's talk about that first impression, which is critical. What you see and how that horse looks at you. What do your instincts tell you at that first impression?
Yeah, I'm a huge one for that first impression because, you know, we can overanalyze things, and I love analysis because I've got to get explanations of what I see across country, what's happening here. And I've got to analyze it to give me an explanation of what my eyes are telling me. And your eyes are, that first impression to me is probably the most accurate one you'll get. And why. I used to think it was a kind of a gut feel, ethereal and mystic and everything. I wish it was so. It's way more than that. It's all the experience in the back of your head. Ticking boxes so quick. I mean, it's the synapses are incredibly quick. Yes, 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 yes. No, no, no. Whatever they are. And that first impression will tell you. Confirmation. Just see a horse stood up and straight away you're ticking boxes. And then you take the horse apart on for confirmation and put them back together again. And you'll occasionally find something that you might have missed first time. But that first impression, a horse has got to wow me. A hound has got to wow me. A woman's got to wow me. It's all the same. And it hits you. It's like you go, whoa. And a good horse is going to do that to you. In the symposium here, we were looking at the horses from the Young Horse Championships last year. And a couple came on the screen. And that first take you get on them, you go, whoa. That's what I want a horse to do to me. And yes, beyond that, those qualities for me revolve, that I'm looking for, revolve around the refinement and the quality of the thoroughbred.
And of course, you hear the word rideability all the time, Chris. That is key. Once you like the look at him, on the ground, he wows you. You're going to get on his back and you're going to look for that rideability, that balance, that rhythm. How that first feeling of what he gives you that first time, what are the markers there? I mean, we talk about instinct when you look at him and you can tick all the boxes, then you get on about. What are your markers when you get on his back?
Some of the best horses I've ever sat on. They might have been even a little bit ordinary to look at, and then you sit on them and you can feel the revs. And it's not there all the time, but you see a flash. I was 15 years in racing, and I was lucky enough to ride and produce and train some top racehorses. I mean, European champion of her year in 83, an absolute brilliant, a Chester mare, would you believe it? And from the day one as a four-year-old working around the track, you could just feel it. You might only feel it for 10, 15 seconds. You feel the engine revving, and not high revving, but just the low heartbeat, the conversion of energy into just rhythm and balance. I was lucky enough to interview Michael Young there over in Strahm in Holland, and asked the two most important qualities. Yes, rhythm and balance. You've mentioned them already, Chris, rhythm and balance. The other one that's interesting, you've already mentioned as well, I think it was the start of your question, that was temper. And, you know, we did a survey in Ireland, a postgrad and thesis, and on the qualities of the event horse, and they sent forms to all our riders, all our international riders, and they came back with a prioritized list. And I love this. This is, if you can't measure, you can't improve. And what came back was this: the number one quality, funnily enough, was temperament. Now, if a horse hadn't the right temperament for the game, you're starting from a poor place. And I look at him back at that thoroughbred. I put a slide up of the great Seabiscuit, and he was a special horse for a lot of reasons, obviously, in the middle of the Depression here. He got people dreaming on and thinking, God, you know, life can be great yet, because here was a horse came out of the ashes, you know, and to beat them and War Admiral and all the rest. It was a lovely story. But beyond that, look at, I have a picture of him, and he's looking out into the distance. And that, for me, is what that thoroughbred is bringing in. His horizon, I say he embraces the horizon. He puts his arms around it because he's looking out into the distance and he says, I know I can get there. And that to me, again, is the thoroughbred influence. Sorry, I'm straying a little bit, Chris.
Those elements that you particularly look for, which is, as you say, they're not just instinct, they're years and years of experience checking those boxes. And for those listeners here, Chris, that are not able to attend the symposium, we want to just spread your wisdom a little bit further. And I'm guessing that one of the things that they're going to ask is, well, what would you not forgive when you're checking all those boxes? And a lot of things have gone right, but there's some things that you would not forgive and are going to write that horse off, no matter how good the other pieces are.
The Irish horse has been famed for its constitution, its soundness. You see Lenormand winning Burley at 18 years of age, making a four-star time. Soundness, soundness. And for me, that comes from good confirmation, correct confirmation. You said, what wouldn't I accept? I wouldn't accept a horse back of the knee for a horse to go up the levels. I can see, in my mind's eye, a hawk with a curb, as against a Kirby hawk. You understand what I'm saying? A Kirby hawk I won't take.
Yes.
I want to see a refined, position from the head through to the neck, because that I want to watch Clear as Wind. And there are some lines that are red, some lines of warm blood as well that are very, very thick in there. And I won't have that compromise. I just want an easy step. And for me, I'm not looking for the flashiest mover at all. I want lightness on the ground. For me, it's essential, lightness on the feet, for whatever level I'm going for. And it's also leading to soundness. I don't see awesome landing heavy on the ground, hammering the ground on landing after a bench. I want lightness. I want balance. Obviously, uphill as I can find them. And I'm probably more forgiving than most with the young horse. I'm normally buying 2-year-olds and 4-year-olds also, but mainly 3-year-olds. So what would I accept? Those are the ones I won't accept. But you can see an automatic rhythm and balance even at that stage, even as a 2-year-old. And I've got a picture in my mind what I want to see as a 2-year-old, as a 3-year-old. And obviously, as they mature. One thing I'm watching out for, again, a horse with the refinement, a horse that isn't going to go plainer. Occasionally, horses can get a bit plainer from 3 to 5. And I have my own critique that I will judge on there. And so far, it's done as well. It's done very well.
And let's talk a little bit more now about what you've seen there in Ocala. You mentioned you've got a lot of Irish-bred horses, a lot of Irish blood there that's pleasing you to see, I'm sure, being exported from Ireland. Talk about the horses that you've seen and the impressions that you've got and the kind of things that you felt you needed to focus on.
Yes, excellent. I have a very, very good friend and client and mate, and Robin Walker, and he's taken a lot of horses off me back the years. And for me to get as a producer and as a man trading in horses, to get a horse into hands like Robin's, I mean, it's just for me. And to see him progress with him, and yeah, I've seen a lot of horses. Most of his barn would be Irish bred. And then to see him in action. This is where every critique has got to be based on performance for me. If it isn't performance based, you're missing the point. In commercial sales of horses, what you're producing isn't what the market wants, you're going to fail. So market based for me and performance based is where I'm coming from. I saw for the last 4 days in Rocking Horse, the horses competing there at all levels, from beginner novice up to advanced. What you have in Italy here, ground to die for. The stand base is just amazing, absolutely amazing. I hear the horses galloping by me. It's a funny sound, a sound I've never heard before. That hollow kind of a thud, whereby there's no concussion. You are on ground to die for here. There's no doubt about that. Now, I can understand with that and the weather why everything migrates down south. I'm very jealous of you. We're underwater at home, as we are most times, but I watched a lot of users and cope with it, which is another day's work. Ocala, along with where we are here, what a facility. Absolutely brilliant. And having the physicians here, and Chris Burden, I mean, it's been an absolute joy to watch. I mean, what I suggest as well, anybody should make use of these USEA symposiums, because somewhere along the line, you suddenly find an idea. That's very interesting. And you put your own picture together eventually of all the pieces that make sense to you. And that's the advantage of a beautifully run, highly skillful run. And I think my hat's off to USEA for putting this together.
So finally then, Chris, before I let you go, what would be your takeaways? What are the impressions that you're going to take home with you if you were to summarize the symposium and the horses that you've been seeing over here?
Yeah. There's an anomaly I picked up on, and perhaps you can help me, Chris, and maybe they're rocking a horse, and I see the amount of thoroughbreds on the go. You have a massive a number of thoroughbreds, which I just, well, it's my heart and soul, the thoroughbred, and I just love them. And then I see a much heavier type of horse, a much heavier type of horse, probably with a lot of continental influence, and you have two extremes there, pure blood, and the horse for me that has enough blood. And question that needs asking, why don't you put more blood into your horse? You mightn't want full blood, but why not go 3/4? And for me, I didn't see enough. I'm not critiquing here, but I'd like to see more 3/4-bred type. I saw a thoroughbred, brilliant. And in Gracie Thoroughbreds, then, even in the beginner novice. But for me, I'd like to see for me, the three quarterback. Why? Because commentating as frequently as I have at the internationals and all the rest, to me, the three quarterback. And from the breeders here again, you have got such thoroughbred blood here, and use it. And again, I'm always promoting the Irish horse, obviously, and because I'm he's my heart and soul as well. Cross with thoroughbred, and there's plenty of good semen there available for these Irish breds as well. Cross with your thoroughbred mares.
Well, ever the salesman, Chris, promoting the Irish bred horse, doing a marvellous job there. And we want to thank you so much for your contribution to this year's symposium and for taking the time to come on the podcast and talk to us today. Thank you very much.
Chris, I just say thank you to Mark Hart, to USEA. It's very well attended, this seminar. And make sure your listeners hook up to the podcast and all the information that comes out of this USEA symposium. It's very, very good stuff.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time, Chris.
God bless, Chris. God bless.
And now Chris Burton joins us. He was a clinician at the Instructor Certification Program there, which ran in conjunction with the Future and Young Event Horse Symposiums. Chris needs very little introduction from me, but to remind you that he was part of the Australian Olympic teams in 2012 and 2016, and he's also a winner at Burley. And he also took the 6 and 7-year-old class at the 2016 Le Lion d'Angers event. Chris, welcome to the programme.
Hello, thank you very much.
Nice to talk to you again. It's been a while.
It has been a while, Chris. It has.
So let's talk about the wonderful time that you had in Ocala, courtesy of the USEA, and that symposium being the masterclass there. First of all, tell us your impressions, Chris, of the horses that you saw and the whole environment. Give us an overview to start with.
Yeah, I have to say I've had a great time while I've been here. I've been well looked after. Tim Holkamp put us up at his place, and that was really nice of them. Everyone's been very accommodating. I think the program that they're running down there is a really good program. You know, I think it's a great thing. And I have to say, I saw some very nice horses in the time that I was there. I don't know if they only brought the nice ones out for me, but I saw some good riding. So I think the sport of eventing is looking strong in here in America.
Now, what were the kinds of things that you identified that were going to be most helpful to the horses that you had in front of you, Chris, on that first assessment?
Oh, look, I had, I had so many things. It was, you know, 3 days there, so I ended up a little bit scramble-brained in the end. So there's many, many things that we can talk about, but I think, you know, the common theme that we saw when we talked about flat work, everyone sort of wanted to say, well, like, the common one was the horse coming behind the vertical, and I was explaining that actually it's the riders that needs to be able to solve that issue by pushing their hand forward. So all sorts of things like that.
And some of the things, I mean, were basics, of course. It's just reinforcing the basics, isn't it? But it's also putting a different spin on them, a different angle to them, for people to maybe just absorb that information in a different way. Let's talk about distances and the horse's jump. Give us the sort of points that you tried to cover there, Chris.
Yes, so it was interesting, just to go back to what you were saying about how you sort of relay it in different ways, and that's always a tough thing as a coach or as a trainer. It was great fun. Leslie Law and I worked together at the end, and we were both mic'd up and talked through how we ride our and train our horses. And it was interesting for me how similar it was. We would both do exactly the same thing with the horse, but you could really say it and verbalize it in very different ways. And so that was really quite interesting to watch. And that's what I sort of decided with my coaching a long time ago, is that if I can try and make it as clear and as simple as I can to people, I feel like that really can help, and then people always run with it and do it with what they want. But going back to your question in regards to distance, I mean, it's something that I'm saying a lot at the moment. I've been doing a few clinics around the globe, and something that I get in trouble about doing, because I'm talking about training the riders to see a distance, and there are some people in the UK that think we shouldn't be too distance obsessed, and I disagree. I'm always trying to find the right spot for the horse, but how we get there is always a different thing.
It's it's interesting some of the points I understand that you made about, you know, whether to circle or not and, you know, seeing that right distance and some of the intricacies of it to perfect it in a way. And for this wider audience that weren't able to attend down there in Ocala, Chris, give us just a few takeaway points for them on the very principles of what you were trying to convey there in Ocala.
Do you know the one that I love most that I'm always sort of doing is very simply just two show jumping poles on the ground about 5 or 6 strides apart and getting people to shorten and lengthen strides in it. And it sounds, for anyone that knows anything, it sounds extremely simple, but it was quite good fun. Even with the advanced group that I had, is that you could even pull them up on little things, like one of them might change legs over it, and say, you know, what you think is a simple exercise can become quite difficult. And so that's the one I use most in a way to try and also educate the younger riders how to see a distance to the pole or to the fence, the same thing.
Right, and then of course on the actual training of your horse and some of the basic fundamental principles of, you know, just step by step, the whole process. In riding, I believe you said you should ride a 4-year-old better than you should ride a 4-star horse. Unpack that a little bit for our audience here, Chris.
I know, I still catch myself saying some funny things when I teach sometimes, but but common theme that I see is people will have a young horse and they will sort of hide behind the fact that it's a young horse, and so that's why I always make a joke, and they say that's why I ride it badly, and I sort of chuckle. But really, you know, if you're riding a young horse that ever jumps for the first time or flatting it, you have to work really hard to ride it as well as you possibly can. So that's the point that I make. I just get a little bit tired of people telling me that it's a young horse, and that's my excuse for not doing a good job.
So let's just talk about being a good rider then. I know that you have just a few, you know, takeaways here for what the riders were listening to and those that attended this week. But also, I think for a wider audience here, it's helpful for them to understand what you mean by being a good rider, because clearly you are one of those people with the success that you have and keep producing young horses. So what should they really understand about this, the fundamentals of being a good rider?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's such a broad question, isn't it? Because there are so many things, as you know, that go into being a top rider. But I think, you know, the nice thing about the symposium was we had a range of horses and we had a range of riders, and it was easy for the audience to spot. We had Lauren Kiefer come down there, and I would ask her to do a demonstration for us. She did it so beautifully, you know, there was nothing to say, and it was very easy for them to see. But I think, you know, the essence of it is that the rider is able to get the horse to the fence or make the horse do what they're asking on the flat, and in the end they can show us the horse doing what they want on the flat without doing anything. So the essence of it is doing very little to get the horse to do at all.
So that begs the question of nature versus nurture then, and how much, you know, the rider should expect to have as a natural talent versus the skills that they can learn. Where do you see that crossover? What makes a rider great and a horse and a good horseman or woman, Chris?
Yes, it's something that, look, I know what you mean. You know, I know what people mean when they talk about naturally talented riders. But I have to say, it's something that really irks me because I mean, I'm sitting here with Boyd Martin right now, and you can't say he got where he got just by being a natural rider. You know, yeah, a rider has to work at it. And I always say when I'm teaching, someone said to me, "Oh, you sit the trot well, you're a natural rider," or something like that. And I thought, well, actually, when I was really young, I had a lesson with a guy called Ron Patterson, and he said, "You're bouncing." And he said, "Take the stirrups off." And I went home and I rode my brother's horses and all the horses I had for hours without my stirrups on, and put myself through a lot of pain, you know, and for days and weeks and months. And so nothing about it was natural at all.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, because I'm going to pick you up on a quote that I understood you delivered there this week, that teaching good riders is a gift, not a chore.
Yeah, that was quite fun. They had one group, and it would only happen in a symposium like that. It wouldn't regularly happen in a clinic if this group of three girls sort of came along. And I was scratching my head after a while, thinking, what am I going to do next with them? They were, everything I asked them to do, they rode and did so beautifully. and it was truly a pleasure.
So I'm going to ask you then what your philosophy is as a coach now. As you say, you're an established coach. You go globe-trotting, teaching people around the world with these clinics. So it's more than being just a very good rider. It's actually conveying, being a good teacher and being a good coach. What do you see as your philosophy?
Look, I do try to keep it very simple, you know. I always say I want the horses to stop and go and turn right and turn left. And then, of course, you can talk about that in depth for hours, really. But basically, I try to keep it simple and keep the exercises simple, and then people start to get a grasp of it. I try to have clear ideas and not get too weighed down with the nitty-gritty of it, because a lot of people get further confused if you're not careful.
Do you find that something that happens in different cultures wherever you go in the world, Chris, to teach? Is that a cultural thing, how they might just want to overanalyze and make it more complicated than it needs to be?
Yeah, perhaps, maybe not. I don't know. I don't know if there's much difference globally. I think at different levels, you know, you'll see professionals have a very clear understanding of training, and you'll see amateurs talking a lot of nonsense, you know, that are adding extra things into the mix that's unnecessary. So I couldn't say I see a cultural thing. I taught a clinic recently up in Sweden, and that was really fun. They were really good to teach, and obviously I don't speak a word of Swedish, and a lot of the time there was a language barrier. And still I felt, you know, by trying to have simple basics, we still had a great time.
So tell us finally, Chris, what do you most enjoy about coaching horse and rider as opposed to training horses?
Oh, that's very topical in my household at the moment, because we're due to have our first child in May, so hopefully that goes well. And I am starting to wonder whether I should be riding less and coaching more, but of course it's never easy, because it's easy to get busy helping everyone else and not yourself. So I do enjoy coaching when it goes well. And certainly when you get given horses and riders like I was in Ocala, it was really fun. So, I don't know. I hope some people might disagree with it. Some people might think that my coaching methods are barbaric and hopeless. So who knows?
I don't think so somehow, but I know that Boyd there can give you some advice on parenthood.
Yeah, that's right. I'm trying to find out all I can, exactly.
All right, good luck with that. But before you go, tell us what your own plans are for this season and the year ahead, Chris, with the horses that you have.
Yeah, thanks. And an exciting year ahead. Hopefully one for Kentucky. Certainly one, maybe the two for badminton. And then hopefully Beck can hang on to our baby until after that. That'd be nice, and we might take a bit of time off then.
Well, I'm sure you probably will. Of course, that will be very distracting for a while. But and then we expect you to be coming back for try-on. And are you taking a look at the facility there so you know your way around while you're here?
No, I should have done. I should have been better organised. But it sounds amazing. So I hope I'm lucky enough to have a horse and to be selected for try-on. It really sounds like it'll be a fantastic show.
Well, we want to thank you again for being the chief instructor there at the USEA's Instructor Certification Program Symposium in Ocala, Florida this week. Chris, thank you very much for doing that, for your input in the sport, and of course for taking the time to come on the program.
Great talking with you, Chris.
And you can read more about the ICP Young Event Horse and Future Event Horse Symposiums, which took place there this week in Ocala, Florida, by going to the website at useventing.com. Don't forget to follow on social media at Facebook and Twitter for all the latest updates from the USEA. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time for another podcast. Until then, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world, and enjoy your eventing.